We present the Sound of Football podcast, a ride on the football fairground. My teams to go down are Blackpool, Blackpool and Blackpool. Those are the same clubs, but they're going to be so bad this season that they're actually going to be allocated all three relegation spots, because that's how bad they're going to be.
Oh, who else is down there?
Fulham. That's who's going to go down.
That's it. They're going to join him. Mark Hughes is going to crash and he's going to burn that club. He's going to suddenly forget he's not at Man City, and then he's going to suddenly think, Jesus, how did I do this when I was at Blackburn? And he's going to try and impose that, and it's all going to go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong.
Yes, welcome everyone. This is the 50th edition of The Sound of Football. I'm Chris Oakley, and joining me as ever with their unique brand of insight and humour are Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello, Terry and Graham.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
Easy on the party poppers and the streamers, everyone. Yes, this is a bit of a milestone for us. And to celebrate, we've commissioned a special nostalgic version of the theme tune, which is based on the one that we've been using for the last 49 episodes. And we hope you enjoyed it just then. So, lots to talk about. The season is now properly underway. The Premier League has started. So we're going to be talking a bit about that. We're also going to talk about the Champions League later on, but we're going to start off with possibly the big kind of marquee game this week, Arsenal versus Liverpool. First game, dare I say it, involving two teams out of the big four, although Liverpool are only just scraping back into that category. I'm not even sure that everyone would agree with that, but a big game nonetheless, and it finished 1-1. And, of course, well, Graham, we need to come to you, really, being an Arsenal supporter, giving us your particular insight. Try and be as neutral as you can, if you don't mind, please. Thank you.
Well, I'll try to be. I'll try and say Arsenal instead of we and that sort of thing.
Oh, to hell with it. We don't work for the BBC. Just do what you like.
Well, actually, yeah. I suppose, really, if you'd offered me 1-1 at the beginning of the game, I would have said, yes, OK. Yeah, fine, take that. Mm. Happy enough, Anfield and all that. I think that Liverpool are going to do well this season, so I think that, you know, us salvaging a point there is a good result at the end of the day. That said, when you go in at half time, when you've dominated the possession in the first half and Liverpool are a man down, you suddenly think, well, actually, yeah, we should win this one now. And yeah. Fair play to Liverpool, because they came out, they scored the goal, and they played as good as I've seen Liverpool play in a long time. For a side that didn't have a lot of possession during the game, they were beaten hands down for possession for most of it. But that said, they played really well. They played a good absorbing game. They played a very organised display. Mascherano had a great game. I'm not Mascherano's biggest fans, but I like to take my hat off and say that he was breaking up all Arsenal's play there. Arsenal were a bit disappointing, I think, in midfield. I think Diaby and Arshavin were still in their flip-flops. They didn't really contribute much at all. I'm surprised they both stayed on for as long as they did. When there was a double substitution early in the second half, and neither of them went off. I was, well, what's going on there? Who else did I say? I thought Wilshere. All right, he was involved in the goal that Liverpool scored, but I don't think you can really blame him. Yes, he's very inexperienced, but he's only going to learn by playing more games. So I thought he had a good game. I thought Walcott had a good game when he came on. Didn't see too much of Van Persie, but it looked bright enough.
Schenk, it said, went a bit sort of AWOL for most of the game, but then his first game in the Premier League.
Yeah, so. I think that's really more down to Skrtel. I think Skrtel had a fantastic game of keeping him under control. He used his experience against Schenk there, and you could see it was like slight little tugs and pulls here and there, but nothing really worth a foul or anything like that, and he played him pretty well, and it was only at the last minute. I mean, I think if he'd had marshalled him for that crossing, I think Reina would have probably held on to that, and it would have been wouldn't have ended up in the comedy goal that it was in the end.
Terry, Sorry, I was just going to say, Terry, did you see much of the game? If so, what did you make of Liverpool's performance?
I saw all the game, and I thought that I thought Liverpool played exceptionally well. There's a fascinating Barney taking place on Twitter after the game between zonal marking and his numerous critics about the definition of dominating, because he argued for good cause that Arsenal dominated. And then he was retweeting all these Liverpool fans saying they didn't dominate, they didn't dominate. But of course, the statistics and the possession statistics clearly show that Arsenal enjoyed, the overwhelming, majority of the possession. Mm. But they didn't really control the game, Arsenal. I mean, because if they had controlled the game, they'd have won it. I thought that the way that Liverpool sort of kept Arsenal back and at bay once they got that goal was the classic modern style of winning football matches, and really interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Terribly entertaining.
Fully there, actually. I think the Arsenal did have a lot of possession, but they didn't do a lot with it, and it shows in the number of, in the very important stat of the number of shots they had.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there was you could look at passes completed and possession stats, fine, but how many shots on goal were there? And I don't think that they're quite so impressive. And I mean, Arsenal simply couldn't find a way through an extremely organised 10-man defence to all intents and purposes after Joe Cole's completely justifiable and correct sending off, it should be said. Going off the ground and doing a scissors kick is very dangerous tackle and is, by the rules of the game, it's reckless, and a reckless challenge is instant red card. So anybody who's been watching Andy Gray on Monday Night Football, just forget it. Forget what he said, okay? Pick up a copy of the rule book.
He's not
and then
talking
send it to
you.
Andy Gray. Okay? them's the rules. I mean, it's harsh on Joe, because, he's not that kind of player.
Oh, he's not that kind of player.
You stole my line.
Actually, he is.
Swine.
He's terribly clumsy. He is a terribly clumsy tackler, Joe Cole, it's got to be said. And he was put under, he put himself under pressure because he was robbed of the ball, and then in a desperate attempt to make up for it, he did that. But he could have really, 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 really caused an injury, so that was fine. But anyway, getting back to the game, it was, I thought it was an excellent sort of like controlled exercise by Liverpool, and they can feel a little bit hard done by that they got there. But I mean, you could also say that perhaps Arsenal got a deserved equaliser. I'm not so sure though. I would have liked to have seen Arsenal create a really clear cut chance, and you were never certain about that. I'd like to. I'm sorry, Chris, you're and I was freezing you out on this. It's intentional, but I would be interested in Graham's thoughts on Almunia. Should he be strung up by the ghoulies that he appears to be doing right now? And what do you make of all the whole, Givens on his way malarkey?
It's purely malarkey. I think it's. I think that. I think Almunia came under some rather undeserved criticism yesterday for the goal. I don't think he was to blame for it. I think, yes, all right, it went in the near post, but it didn't just sneak in the near post. It was right in the top corner. And it was hit with quite a lot of power. And the mistakes had already been made by the defenders. That was clear enough. Yeah. He did flap a few things, though. A couple of crosses came in that he looked very nervous at, and given the press he's had recently, I'm not surprised. He's not that good. He's not top draw European goalkeeper class. But then again, I don't think Arsenal are in really the market to spend $80,000 a week on a goalkeeper, which is what we'd probably end up having to pay someone like Shay Given. I don't know how much Shay Given's on, but thinking what his contract's like at Man City, it wouldn't surprise me. If Shay Given does come to Arsenal, all lovely, but, it's argle-bargle at the moment. Schwarzer, yeah, fine. I mean, how old is Schwarzer now? 35? Which, probably not that much. Oh, I mean, that's not really far off what he bought Lehman at. So, and he got a few seasons out of him, so that's not too bad. And he's a proven Premiership goalkeeper. I think it's... I don't know what the thinking is in the media about Almunia, but I think perhaps it's just easy content. But I think the criticism that was levelled at him after the goal was unnecessary.
But there you go. I don't know. Did you pick up on that, or did you not, Chris?
I'm always a bit sort of sympathetic towards goalkeepers, I must admit, because as you say, I think they do often come in for unfair criticism, and I think my feeling is overall that Almunia isn't necessarily any worse than he's not a rotten goalkeeper. Let's put it that way. He's not sort of gaff prone particularly. Yeah, he probably has made one or two mistakes, but the thing is, being a goalkeeper, you're in a critical position there. You've only got to make a slight mistake, and it can result in a goal, as opposed to most other, if not all other positions on the pitch. And I think generally he's actually a really good goalkeeper. I would suggest Given is probably an ideal candidate to take over, in that he I'm not sure actually whether he's now been demoted to sort of second choice goalkeeper, but there's certainly a momentum of support behind Joe Hart. So if he does end up sitting on the bench, then Given deserves to be played, deserves to be given a chance to play at some club or other. And I think Arsenal will be an excellent fit for him, actually. I'm kind of with you on that, Graham. I think I'm not sure that Arsenal are really kind of busting a gut to buy a replacement as such. And one could argue that they've got, you said, I think last week, that they're a bit thin defence, but ultimately they've got some good defenders, and the rest of the team is excellent and should be able to kind of keep the goalkeeper's work to a minimum, one could argue. I don't know. I was going to change subject slightly and very quickly just to wrap up on the subject of Arsenal and Liverpool. Graham, relief, bit of relief that Koscielny doesn't appear to be seriously injured then?
Well, very much so, yeah. I think when he went off at half-time, we're all fearing the worst, especially after what happened with Kenwyn Jones, making his debut and then limping off. And I think Arsenal fans have seen it enough with some idiot going in, someone who's not that sort of player going in and with both feet off the ground, and players then missing three game and our player missing 6 months. Because it's happened so often, you always fear the worst. But hey, here we've got a defender now who's actually resistant to injury. Touch wood. which is very good, because obviously just before the game, Jeru was announced that he was injured as well. So is just very worrying again, because Arsenal have just become thinner again at the back. I don't know what he's going to do. In which case, for the next, I presume it's only going to be one game, as it's two yellows for Koscielny, but he'll be missing the Blackpool game. So I wonder if he'll bring Song into defence.
He may well do. Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, there we are. A cracker of a game to start the season off. That particular game between Arsenal and Liverpool, and there was a few other interesting games going on as well. Of course, we saw the procession that was Chelsea beating West Brom 6-0. They're just flying in the old goals there for Chelsea, if you kind of consider the end of last season as well as the start of this one for them. Doing a tremendous job there. And involving two more evenly balanced teams, we had the match between Tottenham and Man City. Now, of course, you don't have to cast your mind back too far to remember the battle that was going on between those two teams in terms of trying to snatch that last, the fourth qualification spot for the Champions League, which, of course, Tottenham got in the end. But new season starts. Man City have thrown a lot more in the way of reinforcements into their team. New players spent liberally, as we know. Tottenham, on the other hand, have barely bought anybody. They've just got Sandro as their only kind of purchase, and I think he was bought sort of at the end of last season or something like that, I think during the summer maybe. So two teams that have had differing summers. Terry, what did you see much of that game, and do you think that Tottenham, as is seems to be the consensus, were perhaps the better of the two teams?
I think Tottenham were definitely the better of the two teams. I saw the whole game as well. Tottenham just looked fit and ready for the start of the season, whereas Manchester City didn't. Manchester City looked like they were 2 weeks behind.
Yeah.
Tottenham looked like a team that were ready to play in their first Premier League game and indeed then go to Switzerland and play in a vital Champions League qualifier. They looked stronger, more coordinated. They looked bigger, frankly. I don't know whether they actually are physically a bigger side, but they just looked much more polished and much more like it. And really, really should have won the game quite comfortably in the first half, were it not for some pretty impressive goalkeeping by Joe Hart.
Tremendous, wasn't he?
He was a really good display. I mean, I know it's easy to get carried away with these things. It could be argued that it was just merely a competent display. Nevertheless, with that amount of shots that he stopped, perhaps another goalkeeper might have let one in. And so I think City have got a lot to thank him for in the first half. Mm. They managed to turn things around a little bit, didn't they, the second half and coordinate themselves a little bit. I thought David Silva's criticism was unnecessary given that he's just arrived, he's just come back from Mexico, he's just won a World Cup, and it's his first game in England, a competitive fixture in England. I think that any kind of criticism of any of the newer signings is a bit stupid, really, frankly, because the season's barely started and it does take time to get involved. We'll definitely see a lot of Manchester City.
Yeah.
But I think that they'll be pretty happy with the point, given the circumstances, given the hiding they could have had, were it not for their goalkeeper.
Yeah, I don't think it's even sort of getting carried away with the whole kind of argument of whether Joe Hart should be England's number one goalkeeper from now on. I just thought he was a tremendous display, I thought. I mean, just some of the saves he pulled off. And I think as you... suggested there, really, they could have been several goals down, and Tottenham did fly out of the blocks right from the start. Actually, they just looked like they were totally ready, and I can foresee that they will. My guess, I've just got this hunch, I guess, that against Young Boys in the Champions League playoff round this week, I think they're likely to score, maybe four. I don't know why, I just think four or five goals. I think they're just, if they play like they did against Man City, then I don't think they're going to have any problem with a team of Young Boys calibre, but I could be proven wrong.
No, I think you're perfectly right there, Chris. I think Tottenham put a great display in it. I think Terry really did sort of sum it up quite perfectly there. Man City looked pre-season in that first half, and they were lucky to go in at 0-0, whereas Tottenham did seem on fire. And I think if they go out and play that way against Young Boys, they'll have a very easy time of it in the second leg.
Yeah, I mean, far be it for us to sort of crow about the, what we mentioned last week. I think certainly Terry was in agreement with me when I said about whether Man City could kind of fit all of these stellar players into the same team and all the rest of it. And far be it for us to sort of suggest that we've already seen the effect of that. But, it does kind of beg a belief. You've got sort of Adebayor coming on well into the second half. We know about Bellamy. Looks like he's not even going to get into the final 25 that has to be named at the end of the month. So you sort of do wonder. But, as you say, Terry, I think the players like David Silva and Yaya Toure, they did look a bit unfocused, but it's nothing, it's no more than you'd expect, frankly. And the amount of stories you read about foreign players who currently either are playing in England in the Premier League or have done in the past that sort of say... it took me a fair while to kind of suddenly... It took me a while, rather, to get up to the pace of the game, the speed of the game in England. It catches a lot of players by surprise that come over to the Premier League. So, with that in mind, I think we have to cut them a bit of slack somewhat. But as he is...
It can't be forgotten that they did come away from White Hart Lane with a point. And I think as well, I think... the guy Kolarov at the back, although he went off, he seemed to fit in quite well and got up to speed of the game quite well. So
yes.
I don't think it's all bad news for City. I think if that's them on a bad day, then it's signs of things to come from them, I think.
Just to very quickly summarise one or two of the other games going on in the Premier League at the weekend. In fact, there's a game going on as we speak, which is Manchester United against Newcastle. Last time I checked, and I'm famously wrong with these things, but at half time I think it was 2-0 to Manchester United. I don't know what the score is now, but...
I'll have a look.
Go on then.
I think it's fair to say that the listener will know when they're listening to this.
Yeah, I know, but this gives it. This like puts it in the moment. It's still 2-0, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Another action going on at the weekend. Aston Villa played against West Ham, and of course that was a game which had many people's focus by virtue of the fact that Martin O'Neill left the Aston Villa this time last week. I predicted, confidently it has to be said, a 1-1 draw for that game, because I felt that Aston Villa were somewhat in disarray and that West Ham were perhaps a team slightly on the up, certainly because of a rare decent showing in pre-season games on West Ham's part. But I couldn't have been more wrong. 3-0, and all I saw on Twitter, I think, during the course of Saturday afternoon was comments from people saying West Ham are awful, absolutely shockingly terrible. And I think that was borne out by the fact that I think West Ham only had one shot in the entire game. So bit of a worry, but I think I'm still confident. I think Avram Grant can turn things around at West Ham. It's going to take him a while, but I suspect it looked to me like West Ham were very unfocused on Saturday. They just looked, a lot of the players were just sort of dawdling around, didn't seem to really know what position they should be in, who they should be marking, and so on. Aston Villa, on the other hand, looked a refreshingly positive prospect. Really, I think. Is it Kevin McDonald?
Yes.
Was his first name right? Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. But yeah, Kevin McDonald, who I have to say, last time I saw him was in my Panini Football 86 album, playing for Liverpool. And he had a bubble. He had a bubble perm, but then probably a lot of players did in those days. But it's strange to see him now, fat and bloated, and balding. But then that's probably the direction I'm going in. So less said about that, the better. I think he's in temporary charge of the club. And from some of the sound bites that are coming from Aston Villa, it sounds like that a lot of the players are quite happy, thank you very much, to be playing for him, and they played under him, shall we say, in the youth side and so on, coming through the ranks. So I wouldn't be surprised if he suddenly rises towards the top of the betting for who may be the successor. I can't even say it, the successor, aside from all your Bob Bradleys and everybody else. But yeah, might be worth a punt if that's your thing. And also, of course, a special mention to Blackpool, who had a tremendous win, 4-0 at Wigan. And, I mean, we've said before about the fact that a lot of the newly promoted teams have a real flourish at the start of every Premier League season when they first come up. And the consensus, certainly from people I've spoken to today, is that that's probably going to be no different for Blackpool. But well done to them anyway. Tremendous performance. Not many newly promoted teams that can score 4 against an established Premier League team, so well done to them. Any thoughts on Blackpool, fellas?
I think that...
Sorry, Terry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, I was just going to echo what we've said before. I mean, it is marvellous. Wigan are awful, and... they can be dreadful, and it heaps pressure on Martinez, which is a shame, because I really would like Martinez to succeed, because I like his style and I like the kind of players he brings in. But they were devastating, Blackpool, weren't they? I mean, as awful as Wigan were, Blackpool were devastating, and Wigan played right into Blackpool's style of play. And they'll never have played a game like that in the Championship, where an opposition was so accommodating towards them. they would never have been allowed to have played like that.
I tell you what, it reminded me a little bit of the playoff final. But
yes.
without
which
your,
I didn't see.
Without the opposition scoring a few goals along the way.
without the opposition, full stop.
But if we're to understand Ian Holloway's tactics, this is how he played. He took his sabbatical for a year. He looked at the way teams were playing. He said, "Look, we should, if I ever get back into management, I'm going to open up. I'm going to play attacking football. If I'm going to show, I'm going to ship some goals, but frankly, it's worth it because, for what I'm trying to do, there's too many teams here who are playing too defensively and they can be taken advantage of. Because not everyone's Manchester City, not everyone's Liverpool, not everyone's, the top teams with top defences, and they can be breached. And we're about to find out whether he's right. Whether he has the. Well, he's got Arsenal next, and that could be 8-5, couldn't it?
That could be hilarious, this game coming up.
That could be great stuff. I mean, that's the game of the weekend. So, it's fantastic to see the new clubs. I mean, there is a whiff of the... I mean, I remember when Palace were promoted in 97, and we beat Everton on the first game of the season. We had Attilio Lombardo playing for us. We won 2-1, and it was majestic. It really
great
was.
Days.
And we thought, here we go, this is it. This is going to be the best season ever, and we were relegated by a country mile. Let's not get too carried away for Ollie and the gang.
No, indeed. There's so many other examples. I remember Reading starting off well, and of course Hull did to some extent, and so on. So, yes, we'll monitor their progress, and for their sake, we hope it carries on But best of luck at the Emirates next week, that's all I can say. To finish off then, a quick look at the Champions League playoff round, which is beginning this week, starting off probably even tomorrow night, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, the playoff round. So this is to decide which are the last teams to go into the group stage, which is, of course, where all the fur and feathers start flying around. And main English interest there will be Tottenham. Once again, as previously alluded to, they're in Switzerland to play Young Boys. We've already kind of, I suppose, sort of mentioned them, really, in terms of dealt with their chances. I think they stand a very good chance. Anyone there between the two of you sort of feel that there might be some problem or other for Tottenham? I don't think so.
No. I wouldn't have thought so, no.
Elsewhere, though, we have probably tied the round, arguably, is Werder Bremen playing against Sampdoria. Now, Terry, you've been busy writing away your Bundesbag preview for the season, which you can find on footballfairground.com in the next day or two, I think. You'll get the benefit of that. So tell us what you feel of Werder's chances against a strong Italian side.
Well, I don't really know much about Sampdoria. Cassano still plays for Sampdoria,
doesn't
he?
He does indeed, yes.
Ooh, you see, that would worry me if I were Thomas Schaaf. But if, I mean, Graham said in his excellent TV preview on the footballfairground.com that that Ozil was going to play.
Yes, that's, as far as I understand, he's going to play. Klaus Allofs has said.
Yeah, Ozil and Cassano on the same pitch is just going to be, you know, well worth watching. I think it's going to be a cracking game. I think Bremen, they've started the season in good form. They had a good morale-boosting 4-0 cup win at the weekend. They're in really, really good shape. They've got some fantastic players. But then, so Sampdoria, I guess you could argue that maybe Sampdoria might be a little bit rustier because they're about a week or so further behind in that. But then, you know, they could be well prepared. I mean, Graham, you watched more Italian football, I think, than I did last season. What do you think of Sampdoria? Do you think that... I think Bremen are quite capable of getting through. They're an experienced Champions League side. They're perfectly capable of getting through. But what do you make of Sampdoria? Do you think that they've got a good chance?
I think last season they were fantastic. I mean, they were much, much improved on the season before. And I think this is the best Sampdoria team for a little while. Yeah, it depends, but it really depends on how good Italian football is really at the moment, I think. Yes, we see Inter as champions, but that's not indicative of what the whole of Serie A teams are like. I think I'd like to see Italy do a bit better in Europe this year, but and maybe Sam may have the wherewithal to do that. I think they will do well in this game, and I think it helps them being away first. I think they'll grind out a 0-0 in Bremen and try and win it when they get back to back home to Genoa.
Yeah, I should point out at this point that Bremen don't normally do 0-0. It's not something that comes with. With a trip to the Weserstadion, nil-nils are very rare. So I'm not sure that but having said that, if that's the case, then if you follow your logic, then Sampdoria will win because they'll score a goal, or maybe even two, because Werder Bremen, you know, are very good at letting in goals. I think there's going to be goals in both legs of this game. It could conceivably be a roller coaster, possibly. I think we could be looking at extra time. I'm really looking forward to that match, actually. It's going to be the more I think about it, the happier I am that I've got Sky. Other satellite providers are available. Actually, no, they're not, are they?
Well, you can steal it off somewhere, can't you?
Oh, yes, sorry. I'm really glad that I've got your access to illegal internet feeds. Oh, no, I'm not glad at all. I've not even got access. Can I stop now?
Dig up, stupid.
You do realise Rupert Murdoch, even as we speak, is getting his men to find out all your personal details.
Right, men, get round there.
Dear, for what it's worth, I'm going to be trying to watch the Zenit St. Petersburg against Auxerre match. It's a rare chance to watch a French club side playing on proper telly rather than through an illegal internet feed. Auxerre were a pretty good side. They finished third last year in Ligue 1. And their first two games so far this season, they've drawn both. They've drawn 2-2 against Lorient, who, of course, now don't have Laurent Koscielny. And they drew 1-1 against Brest. I'll just leave a few seconds out here. You can have a chuckle.
It's interesting because Zenit have been running away with the Russian league this year because they're obviously quite a long way down on that league now. But Spalletti's in charge of them and doing great things there.
Wonderful. I thought he was particularly good in Help with the Beatles. Anyway, that's one for the nostalgists there. Lots of European action going on this week. Do check it out. It's probably all on Sky and, frankly, nowhere else. So that's about that. I reckon we've pretty much wrapped up this show, our 50th edition, except to say if you want to find more stuff from us, TV previews, Bundesbag articles, Fantasy Football Agent, all of that, plus, of course, the sound of football, do go to footballfairground.com. That's where you'll find everything you need, especially if you want to get in contact with us. Do drop us a line. And please, if you download us via iTunes, feel free to leave us a review if you can, just to tell us whether you like it or not, because we do appreciate that kind of thing.
We're so needy.
Sorry?
We're so needy, aren't we?
We're so needy. Well, it just helps to keep the old fires burning, as it were. But thanks very much indeed for listening for now. Hope you enjoyed the show. Do join us again for another one next week. But for now, from myself, from Terry and from Graham, it's goodbye.
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 Join us on the Sound of Football's very own Facebook fan page at facebook.com/soundoffootball. Follow the Sound of Football on Twitter at www.twitter.com/soundoffootball. Home fires are burning, are they? I think I have a lotion for that.